Hello and welcome back to the Trauma Super Conference. My name is Jaya Bristow and I'm one of your hosts. And today I am very pleased to be welcoming David Cooley. Welcome, David.
Hi, Jaya. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for joining us. So David Cooley is the creator of the Restorative Relationship Conversation Model, which facilitates new and healthier models of conflict resolution that offer legitimate means of reconciliation, particularly in the context of intimate relationships. And you can read David's full bio below this video. So David, let's start with, what is the Restorative Relationship Conversation Model? How did it start?
Well, this comes from an emerging field of new ways of handling conflict. It kind of falls under the umbrella of what we call restorative practices. And so this is a shift away from sort of the punitive or sort of shaming, blaming model that we typically use when we think of conflict, especially when we think of the courts or the judicial system. This is sort of a turn away from those. And so within that sort of expanding field of restorative practices, you see these new sort of ways of dealing with conflict showing up in places like schools or other institutions, especially in the judicial system, like I mentioned earlier. It sort of has a taste or feel of mediation, but sort of takes it a step beyond. And so it's exciting because it's giving people an opportunity to really manage conflict in a way that's very humanizing. It gives people who have harmed other people the chance to sit down and face those individuals, have a conversation, and take full responsibility for their actions, hear how they've affected someone else, what has that been like, and then be in a process that's really proactive that allows people to restore the relationships that have been disrupted through the incidences and figure out a way to move forward. So I was working specifically in the field of restorative justice. And so I was working with the court system. I was working with law enforcement agencies. And I was part of a nonprofit organization in Colorado for several years. And so we were working with individuals that were referred to us by the police department who had committed some crime. And given this opportunity to sit down with the people, like I said, who have been harmed and sit in the context of restorative justice circles. And so I was facilitating those circles, training volunteers to facilitate those circles. And as I was going through that process, I was sort of struck by how many people that walked through our doors were families, you know, or people that had already known each other. And often their conflicts came down to simply not knowing how to manage, one, their emotions, or two, sort of the intensity of a conflict situation. And so I started, after walking away from that field of restorative justice, I started realizing there was an opportunity to use that model for couples, you know, in a way that was more intimate, more immediate, instead of having these larger group circles. I was seeing that there was just a very tangible way to help people work through conflict that's extremely powerful and transformative. So I started, you know, playing with that idea, and the more I started to apply it to the field of intimate relationships, I started to be excited by the potential for it. And so I eventually came up with the restorative relationship conversation model.
Fantastic. Yeah. And so why do you think this particular model is, like, especially relevant, as you say, to couples, but also how is it connected to trauma and why is it relevant to people working with trauma?
Absolutely. Well, as we know, that one of the major consequences of trauma is that it keeps us stuck in the past, right? And so if we haven't had the opportunity to work through a problematic situation or a hurtful situation, then our nervous system sort of have an uncanny way of reliving that, replaying that situation. You know, we're constantly, often at an unconscious level, looking for ways to process that situation. But if we don't have an avenue through which to do it, we sort of just get stuck on repeat. And so for many individuals, interpersonal conflict is very traumatic and can leave them feeling stuck in the relationship. And so this model is really good for anyone who's having any kind of relationship trauma, relationship conflict that feels like it's not resolving itself. And so they need a structure, you know, that's proven to work to really help them move through that and let go as much as possible of the past and figure out in a very pragmatic way what they need to move forward.
And you say that whilst you do work primarily with romantic relationships, it's applicable to all forms of relationships, right? It's including family and friendships, that kind of thing.
Absolutely. It's really for anyone that feels like they're stuck in a relationship conflict that relates to something in the past, some incident or series of incidents that have happened and just continue to linger and feel like they're just not resolving themselves spontaneously. As much as we'd love to believe that hurt will sort of just go away, it doesn't. It lingers and it's recorded in the body. And so that's another powerful element of this work is that it has a somatic component, i.e. the relationship to emotions. And so often working with emotions is a much more effective way of transforming conflict because emotions are sort of the key to unlocking our behavior, right? And so that's sort of one of the critiques that we'll often hear of classic talk therapy is that it doesn't go far enough because it doesn't get to the way that trauma gets ingrained or recorded or stored in the body. And so there needs to be some kind of release of that. And so this work is really good for just giving people a safe space to be seen and heard in that emotion and touch it.
Fantastic. And, you know, as we often know, a lot of our romantic relationships are replaying patterns from our history, are replaying patterns with our primary caregivers. So it makes sense that, as you say, this works in those situations, but with other situations as well. And for anyone who is stuck in the past, as you say, or has conflict or relationships, which, let's be honest, is most people. Very few of us have totally conflict-free, easy relationships with everyone in our lives.
Absolutely. And one of the things that we're learning, you know, the field of attachment theory is continuing to grow and with reason, because I think it's really touching on sort of a cornerstone of conflict in that, as you say, these past sort of patterns that we've developed through the relationship with our caregivers, which in those early years are obviously unconscious and not explicit to us, they just recapitulate themselves. They repeat and play themselves out as we go into adult partnerships. And so if we're not aware of our attachment styles, if we're not aware of our attachment traumas, then we are sort of doomed to step into these vicious repetitive cycles. And so there needs to be a way to work with the nervous system in a structured context to release some of those traumas and consciously work towards new ways of moving forward, of doing things differently.
100%. And I love that you talk about that and the fact that it has a somatic approach and that it's going, you know, beyond talk therapy, as you say, which is a fantastic resource and tool. But it's great to also have like the somatic work and to use that as a kind of framework. And so who is this work specifically designed for? Who is best served by this work?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. This work is really for people that recognize that they're sort of stuck in a pattern or have some kind of conflict issue resulting from something that's already happened in the past. It continues to linger and they know they need help with it. And so it's really for people that are aware of their traumas or aware of the hurts, aware of sort of the conflict cycles. It's also for people that want to step into this process. And so it's different than a mediation situation in the sense that everyone has to be really on board. It's an invitation to step into a process that's facilitated, that's structured, that can really bring healing, but people have to really want that for themselves. And so if that sort of desire to participate, even knowing that it's scary and going to bring up all this stuff, even though there could be resistance, there is that willingness and desire to work through it. So it's for people that are really motivated and kind of wanting to take a proactive approach to lingering conflict issues.
Fantastic. And I think I really like that piece, the fact that there's that kind of consent needed at the beginning, right? That idea that everyone has to come to the table. And so suddenly it opens so many more possibilities because no one's there because they're feeling forced to be there or against their will or because, you know, that no one's resentful to be there or rejecting being there. It's like people are there because they want to work on it themselves. People are there because this is important to them to create healthy relationships, to work and evolve themselves and become hopefully better, more evolved people, or more evolved versions of themselves, I should say.
Definitely. And one anecdote that really sort of was a game changer for me and my experience working in the field of restorative justice was, you know, again, like I said, we were working as a nonprofit organization. Typically, the overwhelming majority of our cases were people that had been referred to us by the police department of the town I was working in. And so those are people who are essentially given a choice between restorative justice or face criminal charges. And so it's kind of like the lesser of two evils in that sense, right? And so there is sort of this leverage that still is pressuring people to make one decision versus the other. And so you can feel the ways in which people step into a restorative justice circle and feel sort of, I don't really want to be here. This isn't my choice necessarily, but it's better than that. And often those people had a very transformative experience, even within that context, and, you know, left feeling grateful for the experience. But I remember that there was a situation where someone came to us. They weren't referred to us. They found out about us. And so it was an incident that happened at an elementary school in the community. And so the principal was a huge fan of restorative justice. He heard about our organization. He was like, hey, I've had this incident between the 6 and 7 year olds, you know, it's like 5 or 6 families. The kids got in this really intense fight on the playground. And this was a small community school where everyone knew each other. And so this kind of rupture was just so impactful, so disruptive to the relationships, not just between the kids, but the families and the school administration. And so this principal really felt the need to find a way to work with this conflict that was going to bring resolution for everyone involved. And so I remember seeing people just participate with sort of a hunger to resolve this issue. Everyone was there on their own accord. No one's being legally pressured to be there. And it was amazing. And I remember thinking, this is my audience. This is the people I want to work with. I want to work with people that recognize the importance of this and are stepping to the table on their own accord, because it's just, the process has a much different energy in that sense. You're not sort of pulling teeth or, you know, kind of coercing, for lack of a better word, people into the process. So that was a big transformative experience for me.
Yeah, I can imagine. I can imagine that, you know, whilst it does work for people when they're reluctantly there, it can work so much better when everyone really wants to be there and wants to do the work. And I think that's true with so many different situations and types of, you know, either therapy or kind of healing processes like this.
Totally.
And so can you tell us a bit more about what's actually involved in this RRC model? What does it look like? What happens?
So basically what the process looks like is there's two parts. And so the first part is just an initial conversation with me. So all the participants show up, usually online. And what we do is I start with guidelines. And so I describe what's the protocol for the process, so everyone has a really clear sense of what to expect in the session that follows. And then after that, I just get a sense of why are people coming to me? What are the incidents that people are still carrying? What do they feel like they're needing resolve around? We talk about the power of intentions and setting intentions. I ask people to ask themselves, why are they coming here? What are their intentions? What are they hoping to get out of the process? And so I actually ask people in between sessions to think about that and write that down so that we can start the proceeding or the following session with those intentions clearly stated so everyone gets to hear those, which is a very powerful exercise. So that 1 hour conversation is to get to know each other, get to know the process, and then figure out what do we need to move forward in the larger restorative relationship conversation. And so that's scheduled for later. It's 2 hours, and that's where we really get to dive in to the heart of the issue. And so I give everyone a chance to really talk about how they've been impacted, what's the experience been like, and then I have people turn to each other, and they talk from the emotion, from their own experience. And so a lot of the guidelines that I offer are really based on systems like nonviolent communication, where people are taking full ownership for their personal experience. And that's a big part of keeping people safe in the context of the dialogue, making sure that people sort of follow that rule of engagement so that they're not attacking each other or re-triggering each other. It's really coaching people on how to step into a listener's role, and then also how to speak from a place of full ownership of their own experience. And so when people are facing each other and talking about how they've been impacted, and the other person's really been coached to just hear it and just receive it, it's incredible what happens. And so I'm guiding people after that to respond and sort of say, yeah, I hear you. I hear how much that hurts. I'm sorry it's been this hurtful. And then we sort of work on affirmations about what does it mean to move forward and let go of that hurt. And it's really amazing. And one of the interesting things about this process is that the concept of, or the title of, conflict resolution is sort of a misnomer. And it sort of implies that conflict is something that we just need to get over with, you know, resolve, get done, and move past. And so what I actually like is sort of moving towards a new culture of conflict transformation. And so starting to reframe a lot of what this process is about is starting to reframe conflict, not as something problematic, but an amazing opportunity or invitation to move into our high, step into our higher selves, to learn something really critical about ourselves. You know, what is this hurt from the past that keeps coming up, and how can we work on it together, not just alone, but in the context of a relationship, you know, and collaborate and find ways to move beyond it. It's so powerful. And one of the reasons why I love this work is because I've seen time and time again the power of one conversation to literally change people's lives forever. And I love that. I love that about the capacity to connect with someone in a space that's legitimately transformative.
Fantastic. I love that. And I love that concept of conflict resolution not being so much about resolving conflict and making conflict better, but using conflict as an opportunity to transform and grow. I think that's a wonderful concept. And yeah, I love it. And so a few questions around everything you've shared. Number one is, how many people do you tend to work with? What are these conflicts? Is it just a group of like usually two or three? Is it larger groups, or does it depend?
It really depends. You know, I work with in a lot of individuals who have alternative relationship styles. You know, I have a lot of individuals, clients who are identify as non-monogamous. And so I've worked with collectives of individuals of up to 4 to 5 people who are all in relationship together. I've also worked with people who are not in sort of intimate relationships together. So I think probably in this particular model, I don't think I've worked with any groups larger than 5 to 6 people, but that's just because that's what's come to me. I mean, I've done groups in the context of restorative justice that have gone up to 15 to 20 people.
Right.
You know, but in general, this model is really suited for smaller, more intimate settings. Mm. And then I even work with individuals. I have people that are coming to me just for coaching. And if you go to my website, you can sort of see that there's an option for people that are just sort of wanting to work on a specific conflict, but their partner, for whatever reason, or partners aren't there or just can't participate for whatever reason, or someone's not even in a relationship, but they know that they have these things that they want to keep working on. They want to develop skill sets for changing and developing their own self-awareness and communication skills. So there's sort of a variety of offerings there.
That was going to be my next question. So I'm glad you answered that about individual sessions and coaching. That sounds fantastic. And then, you know, you talked about NVC, nonviolent communication, which I'm very familiar with, as one of the tools you used. How is it different to NVC? Like what is there that's extra? What is it that goes beyond NVC?
Well, again, there's that somatic component is something that goes beyond NVC. I mean, NVC, I like NVC because it's a solid foundation upon which to build a skill set on. It gives people sort of a place to start. But in terms of sort of learning how to sit with emotions, that's a different skill set, right? And so I really think the incorporating what we're learning about attachment theory is critical, understanding how the nervous system works, especially in the context of conflict. Because in conflict, most of us tend to sort of go into our own version of parasympathetic response, right? We're either fight or flight, right? And so people either shut down, dissociate, or they start to exacerbate the conflict by attacking or pushing back. And so there's some mindfulness exercises that also inform my process, really training people, especially when sort of sitting in the listeners or the speaker mode or roles rather, like how do you sit in that space? How do you occupy that space in a way that allows you to feel everything you're feeling without either shutting down or attacking? How do you stay anchored in your own experience? And so we do a lot of preparation in the process before sharing, sort of working on our nervous system, being like, okay, this is mine. I'm anchoring in this, I'm using breath work, I'm using self-awareness tools, you know, so that somatic scanning component. And so there's an incorporation of various modalities, various fields into this work. And so the NVC is really just about what are the rules of engagement? What are the things we can and can't say to avoid triggering and being triggered, right? And to be heard, right? And so if you're not triggering someone, it's much more easier for your message to be digested, as opposed to saying you're doing this and blah, you know, things like that. But we also have to have that awareness, that body awareness, like where am I within myself? And that's not something that I see as common. It's definitely not something we're taught in our society, or at least society, this culture, society of the United States, where I'm from. And so a big part of this work for me is really in a legitimate way, trying to change the culture of how we relate to conflict. And developing this sort of culture that has included within it this sort of nested model of skill sets. You know, there's self-awareness, there's mindfulness, there's communication, there's all these different pieces that fit together.
Brilliant. Yeah. Well, I think that's a really great explanation of the different modalities you use. It's something I resonate with a lot. I lead workshops on power, privilege, and prejudice. So looking at systemic power dynamics. And same thing, I use NVC tools, I use mindfulness tools, I really focus on the somatic experience. So it sounds like some fantastic work you're doing, and I'm really excited to look you up and find out more about it all, as I'm sure are our listeners. So are there any other services you offer, and how can people find out more about you and your work?
Yeah, definitely. So like I said, you know, working with anyone that's in conflict in a small group setting is my ideal clientele. And then beyond that, it's the individual work with people that just want skill development or want to work with something, you know, from their past relationally that still continues to be problematic or difficult. So it's really those two for now. Those are the two sort of markets that I'm catering to in this moment. And then beyond that, just going to my website is the best way to get in touch with me. So there's obviously a contact page where you can send me an email, let me know what's going on, what you need help with. There's also a scheduling app. So, you know, people that feel like they're already resonating with the modality and just want to jump in, they can go ahead and do that. It's a pretty straightforward and user-friendly interface point.
Fantastic. And so can we maybe give listeners and viewers a little taste of it? Like what are some practical tips of ways people can get started before they jump on board and book a session with you? Like, is there anything that you want to share in that regard?
Yeah, absolutely. A great preparation for this process is any kind of self-awareness exercise, especially around the issue of conflict. One thing that I like to train people how to do is to really just observe, what are your patterns in conflict? Are you someone that sort of shies away or recoils or disassociates, or sort of, are you the conflict avoidant, or are you someone that sort of starts to get aggressive and sort of push against the person that you're working with? And obviously people can have both, you know, you can sort of vacillate, and it also depends on the relationship. What's interesting is some relationships may trigger one response and others may trigger another. You know, there's sort of all the gamut in between. So really, but learning ourselves, that self-awareness piece around, yeah, what is my tendency, is a big deal. Also sort of starting to look at the physiological responses that we have, like how do we feel when we're triggered? What does it look like for us? Is it a shoulders up thing? Is it a tone of voice? Do you start to talk faster? Are there sort of words that you sort of rely on or go to? Do you find yourself losing your capacity to speak? So really just becoming familiar with our own sort of automatic or unconscious responses to conflict is a huge step forward. Another thing beyond that, which is sort of an extension of that self-awareness piece, is to start looking at our communication styles. Are we familiar with any? Have we studied at all sort of ways of communicating that reduce conflict, that are less provocative and more ownership taking? Another way to prepare for a session is to explore attachment theory in depth and figure out sort of, when you're in conflict in relationship, do you tend to an avoidant strategy? Do you tend to an anxious strategy or a dissociative? Or do you feel like you actually have a pretty secure attachment with yourself and then with another partner? You know, so those are all really good starting points to sort of get just sort of a baseline awareness of like, okay, what's my orientation? Where am I sort of grounded within my own process? And what's my own relationship to conflict? And again, starting to just invite people to look at conflict, not as something problematic, not as something to avoid or run away from, but to really start to get curious, like how do we change our own paradigms around conflict and start to see it as this kind of cool invitation. And I like to invite people to get curious, like, okay, wow, you're upset with me. Okay, what does that mean? Yeah, I want to know more. Like, I want to learn. You're giving me an opportunity here. And, you know, that can seem contrived or forced in the sort of first go around. But as you really start to engage it, like, wow, okay, what is this? Where is what's there for me? It can start to change literally the way that conflict feels in your body. And that's ultimately the goal for me, is to just get people sort of reconditioned to look at conflict, not as something problematic, but really a doorway to a more expanded understanding of self.
That's fantastic. I love that. I love all of that. I love all the preparatory elements you've given. So that kind of like self-awareness and questioning what one's relationship with conflict is, what type of, you know, how we respond to conflict, and especially looking at different individual relationships, especially the relationships where maybe conflict arises more often, or relationships that we are where we'd like to have less conflict. And then, you know, as you said, that kind of knowing our body and understanding and noticing the warning signals, right? Noticing how we react physically to conflict. So as you said, like shoulders hunched, or, you know, I know I sometimes get like quite anxious around conflict. So I can have like a racing heart, you know, my heart can race and feel a bit like in sort of flight mode. And so I think that's really, really great for people who are going to engage with this work, which is somatic work, to learn to come into their bodies and notice their physical reactions. And, you know, and I think, again, looking at communication styles, attachment styles, which there's a couple of great books on, including the book Attached, but also for those interested in non-monogamy, there's of course Jessica Fern's Attachment in Non-Monogamy book. And, you know, and then I love what you're saying as well of conflict isn't something that needs to be scary. Conflict isn't something that needs to be shied away from, but instead to get curious about. And I know that on both ends of the conflict, you know, if I'm someone who's angry with someone and I get curious myself about, ooh, why am I getting so angry right now? That can lead to all kinds of interesting things. But if I'm angry with someone and that person, instead of just getting defensive and being like, chill out, starts getting curious and is like, ooh, I can see you're really angry with me. What's going on here? That would also be really interesting for me, right? So I can see how it can suddenly have an impact on what you're saying. Of course, everyone needs to come to the table to do this work all together. Even just one person starting to do this work and starting to do the coaching and starting to question all these things and getting more curious rather than shying away from conflict must create a huge difference in their own life, in the lives of the people around them. And then, you know, from that, it ripples.
Absolutely. And it's palpable. It's interesting. Like, it's amazing how quickly you can actually diffuse conflict with curiosity, because that demonstrates empathy, right? Because you're showing that you're caring. It's a profound gesture of love and concern for the other person. And so if someone comes to you and says, yeah, I'm really pissed or angry about something that happened between us, and you, instead of going, what, you know, going into that explanatory or dismissive mode, and you say, wow, yeah, tell me about that. And you're sincere in that invitation, it's just neutralizing. The person's just like, oh, okay, all right, there's the space to share. And then you go into it, and then you can just hold it and be like, and so the trick is to not go into shame, is to not take on like the fact that, to not interpret the fact that someone's angry with you as problematic or sort of a signal that there's something fundamentally wrong with you, right? So going to the Brené Brown, you know, guilt versus shame thing, you know, doing something that's harmful to someone versus being problematic in your essence, right? Which is sort of the shame spiral. Yeah, that's a really important lesson for us. Another important reframe, I think, in this work is to the way that we think about taking space. Because I'm also seeing a lot in the dynamic between people is they don't know how to disengage when they're triggered.
Right.
And unless you can sort of maintain your composure and stay within a really clean communication style while being triggered, it's often better to disengage. But with people with certain attachment styles, they can't. and they want to stay in that dynamic, and they often make it worse because they're just like, we've got to fix this. We've got to fix it. We resolve it. I can't walk away feeling uncomfortable. So another part of the extension of that somatic self-awareness piece is like, can you deal with your own discomfort? Yeah, it kind of sucks to like have a breach with somebody and not be able to resolve it in that moment. And yet as an adult, that's sort of what we have to learn. We have to learn how to be like, okay, this sucks. We're not feeling loving and connected right now. It can be distracting. It's hard to move on with your day. And all you're thinking about is, I want to get this done with. But like I said before, can you stay curious about your own internal experience? Like, yeah, okay, what is this about? What does this mean? I'm going to sit with this. I'm going to let the waves of feeling move through me. And I'm going to know, I'm going to have the security of knowledge that this is not destructive. It's not a problem. There's something to learn from here. There's a way to grow in the relationship. It's going to change and evolve us in a way that's important. And so really teaching people how to sit in the discomfort of the tension that arises, but not to stay engaged if they're not capable of really communicating in a way that's healthy. And so learning how to take space until you're in a better place and you've had the chance to process, and then reinitiate. The trick is to make sure you reinitiate and not just avoid that situation, right? So that's the trick. So taking space is critical when you need to, but you have to make sure that you're reinitiating coming back to the other person.
That makes a lot of sense. And I think it's really, when you first said taking space, I heard taking up space, which is something very different and the opposite to what you're saying now. So it's really knowing when to, you know, set boundaries, whether you need to set boundaries with a person and remove yourself from the situation for a bit. And I think what's interesting and what you're saying is that, you know, a lot of the times working on relationships doesn't mean always doing it whilst in relationship with the other person. Sometimes it means going off and doing your own process and figuring out what's coming up for you. And then, as you say, super important is to then re-engage. It's not to just totally break off contact and ghost the person. It's to then, you know, take space, process, then re-engage and sort of come up with any insights we've had about oneself, maybe about the other person and why we're feeling triggered and all that kind of thing. So it sounds like a really fantastic model, David. Can you share your website with us?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's www.restorativerelationship.com.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. This has been a great conversation.
Oh yeah, thank you. So much fun. Really enjoyed it.